There are a few people that I lean on and turn to when something really perplexes me, geopolitically, nationally, whatever. He's very connected. His perspective has been amazing. He has broken so many glass ceilings on the American consciousness, the world consciousness, on what really is going on, governmental, deep state, all these words. His new book, In the Shadows of a Presidency, goes this titanic battle that is going on behind the scenes. It's a fantastic book, In the Shadows of a Presidency. He's a geopolitical strategist, award-winning investigative reporter. Very excited to have him on. He's a friend of the Power Hour, and my friend, love to have him on, Daniel Estlin. Daniel, welcome back to the Power Hour.
Much, sir. It's wonderful to be on the show after a long, very long, month-long holiday in Costa Rica and Nicaragua.
Costa Rica, we're very glad that you came back. A lot of people are getting sick. We're glad that you didn't drink any of the water or whatever.
As opposed to abducted by aliens.
Yes, either one. We're glad. Neither one. One of the powder kegs that we're looking at, and we hear the news, and I read these news stories, and I'm not exactly sure how to read them, and I'm very glad you're here to kind of dissect this. Iran, it's been, had a long history with the CIA. Of course, we know about the Shah. We know about Reagan with the hostages, all these things. Iran has been at the center of geopolitical strategy for the CIA for a long time. It's only kind of been sitting at the sideline. Now it's to the front of our consciousness. Tell us about Iran. Who are these people? And then let's get into what is really going on here.
Well, it's a good question. But, you know, my question is, how much do people really understand about Iran? How much do they know about the Shah and the American involvement and the British intelligence involvement? Because, again, you hear about this, as you said. It's, you know, it's front and center right now. I talked about this. You said in my new book, well, it's kind of new old because it came out a year and a half ago, although the things that you and I discussed when you interviewed me on my book, In the Shadows of the Presidency, about Trump's presidency and how he got there and what's behind it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the things we talked about way back when, the end of Bretton Woods model, the need for, you know, to create an alternative economic system. People, I remember, you know, comments from so many different people saying, this guy is nuts. Bretton Woods has been there since, you know, 1944. It's, you know, it's the liberals are, you know, fine. It's just a, you know, typical glitch, you know, on the road to infinite growth. Infinite growth doesn't exist, and we're seeing that, you know, now after Putin's interview to the Financial Times about end of Bretton Woods, and Trump is obviously the reason he became president is exactly that, to dismantle the, you know, petrodollar model, to dismantle Bretton Woods, and he's doing just that. But again, going back to Iran, before we talk about today's Iran, I want to make sure that people understand what Iran exactly is, because the whole thing of Cambodianization of Iran was the planned outcome of interventions into the country in the years immediately preceding the overthrow of the Shah. The hostage crisis, you mentioned Ronald Reagan, Jimmy Carter, the 1979-1980 elections. It was a political management tool, Daniel, created by the pro-Bush father faction of the CIA and implemented through a priori alliance with the Khomeini's Islamic fundamentalists. Now, the purpose of the operation was twofold. On the one hand, to keep Iran intact and communist-free by putting Khomeini in full control, and on the other, to destabilize the Carter administration and also put George Bush in the White House. To untangle the truth about who and what this Iran situation is, we need to look behind the closed doors of the world's most powerful and prestigious banks, oil companies, industrial corporations, and also into the high-rise boardrooms of the elite clubs such as New York Council on Foreign Relations, the brother organization to the Bilderbergers, Royal Institute of International Affairs in London, which was the forerunner created by Cecil Rhodes and the Round Table. So Iran was the battleground for a behind-the-scenes war that is still raging among international circles of high finance and their friends in the various intelligence services of the NATO alliance countries, Israel, and the Middle East. The planners behind the operation to put Khomeini in charge of Iran were the Club of Rome, the most important institution in the world to push the Malthusian depopulation scheme, Institute for Policy Studies out of Washington, Tavistock Institute out of Sussex, England, Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies, and the Society of Jesus, the Jesuits. not to mention the sociology-anthropology complex at the Sorbonne University in Paris, where so many intellectuals, left-leaning intellectuals came from. The Club of Rome and its associates implanted in Iran a network committed to deindustrialization of the nation. This is what Club of Rome has been doing since the 1970s. Again, please understand, popular conspiracy theories aside, Iran was not the victim of some communist conspiracy, nor was it committed to an ideology of revolutionary exportation. If you look at all the characters behind it, and let's not get into the names because people are not going to know what it is, but the communist conspiracy interpretation of the Iranian disaster, and it's an interpretation peddled by the British intelligence circles, just as the same British intelligence circles peddled the conspiracy between, you know, Putin and Donald Trump, you know, in the United States, the conspiracy which has been shown to be a vile conspiracy on behalf of the British intelligence. So if you look at the stuff behind Iran, you're looking at the British intelligence. They still hold sway among important supporters of the former regime. It's also necessary to present an overview of the Club of Rome, its operational policy for Iran, and its resources for the creating this Jacobin revolution, which you have seen not only in Iran but in other countries, which later became known as the Color Revolutions. So this oligarchical group perspective for Iran, in the period between 1968, that's, you know, the flower power, you know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and 1975 period, that's the end of the Vietnam War, was to build up the country, Iran in this case, as an armed entity capable of carrying out the geopolitical crisis management policies. Where have we heard this term before? So when NATO alliance launched the Club of Rome in the late 1960s, the aim was to usher the advanced sector into a post-industrial era, which is what we have right now, with the argument that industrialization threatens to deplete the world's scarce resources. Where have we heard that before? So a series of operations, starting with the 1973-1974 oil hoax, enforced the argument. Then you have the limits to growth propaganda, in the words of Club of Rome founder Aurelia Pecci, was part of a shock treatment designed to prepare populations for supranational resource allocations by the Club of Rome's affiliates in NATO and also the United Nations. And then you have student street gangs were funneled into some late 1960s ecology movements around the world, you know, Greenpeace, World Wildlife Fund, and other countercultural cults. The essential to this effort was discrediting nuclear-based industrial development and its leading third world proponent, the Shah of Iran. So when you hear things about the Shah was a dictator, it's a typical propaganda. Shah is bad, you know, so you have these crazies come in, you know, the mullahs and the ayatollahs. Actually, Shah was very good because his whole concept was developing Iran into one of the leading nations in the world, one of the top 10 leading nations in the world, using their oil resources and its geographical position as a spearhead for this development, something that the NATO alliance, the elite circles in London and Washington simply couldn't permit. And what we have is today is the continuation of that, except new players have basically come in and they're doing the bidding.
Let me summarize this. That was a lot of information. Let me summarize the key points. You correct me where I'm wrong, what have you. Basically, Iran, even far back in the 60s, even before then, Iran's been a central key on these players, seeing that as a chess piece. They pushed Iran. It was starting to develop. The Shah wanted to develop. They wanted to de-develop Iran and to leave it there. Basically as a powder keg to use at their whim. They did that. They came up with the oil hoax. They came up with all this kind of thing, the deindustrialization of the country, until the point where it was controlled so much that it was used by the CIA to really hurt the Carter administration and bring Bush to power, who was the former head of the CIA. And so Iran sits there right now as a shell of what it possibly could be, really as a pawn of the global plan of control and communist control.
That's a very good summary. And yeah, just a couple of things I wanted to add. The driving force behind Iranian industrialization was oil production, as I said, under the direction of the National Iranian Oil Company. And in 1978, probably the biggest petroleum corporation in the world. Now, during the 1970s, Shah battled the British-dominated oil cartel and for decades had controlled Iranian oil. By October 19, again, Iranian oil, like in so many other countries, is not controlled, or other countries' oil is not controlled by the national corporations, by the global cartels. So in the 70s and the 60s, Iranian oil was controlled by BP, British Petroleum. By October 1978, the talks had collapsed over a British offer, quote unquote, which demanded exclusive rights to Iran's future oil output while refusing to guarantee purchase of the oil. So Shah's refusal to submit to London's draconian terms for renewal of this 25-year accord that expired in 1978 was a crucial factor in the decision of the British to bring down the Shah and install a fundamentalist lunatic, Ayatollah Khomeini. Now, again, we hear a lot in the media about Islamic fundamentalism and all that kind of stuff, but if you really ask people, what is it, nobody understands. Because, you know, when you talk about fundamentalism, they immediately associate with some crazy, you know, dude wearing, a bedsheet with long hair, you know, long beard, you know, sandals, and screaming some nonsense, wanting to cut people's heads off, which has really nothing to do with Shiites and Iran. Out of the many different reasons, and we're not going to go into this because it's a bit complicated, there was yet another reason to bring Khomeini to power, and it had to do with the conspiracy to create a unified fundamentalist Islam. So what is Islamic fundamentalism? It's essentially a pre-Islamic irrationalist cult created on the basis of ancient Sufi belief and brainwashing structures insinuated into Islam. Moreover, this revived Sufism is the key to a broader fundamentalist revival affecting Christianity too, because again, the common goal of this revived Sufism, whether in Islamic or Christian garb, is the destruction of the modern nation state. As in the case of Europe, the idea to create a pan-European union devoid of nationalistic tendencies and also unified under one flag, constitution, currency, and ideal. Oh, where are we seeing that again? We're seeing it in Europe. So Khomeini's movement was the outgrowth of attempts to unite Islam in the 1930s and the 1940s under Hassan al-Banna, a Nazi who was very close to Adolf Hitler. So through the Iraqi Shiite Nawab Safavi, one of the extremists in the Shiite movement, the Shiite organization Fedayeen-e-Islami was created as the Iranian branch of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, and Khomeini's godfather, Ayatollah Kashani, met with Hassan al-Banna, again, a Nazi devout Hitlerite and Nazis, in 1948 in Cairo to discuss the reunification of Islam. Now, what does it mean exactly, and how do the Shiite and the Sufi movements and the idea of a single syncretic religion fit into the British-dominated ideology? Because, again, we only see what we get from the mainstream publications. We only get the headlines. And the headlines, these people are nuts. We want to bring, you know, culture and stability and democracy. But, again, Iran was there long before Europe, was anything at all. Because, again, if you look at some of these countries, they've been around for thousands of years. So what does it mean, and how does British ideology...
Dan, let me pause you right there for 1 second. I don't want to let this pass over, and I know we probably won't get to it again. You mentioned Islamic fundamentalism. The question becomes, is that the tool, the gun, the bullet, whatever you want to say, is that the tool that the controllers are going to use or are using to destroy culture and to bring about a one-world government? They're using that fundamentalism.
It's a very good question. You know, between the 16th and the 19th centuries, the British came to dominate the Shiite Sufi movement within Islam. What they did is they combined their Gnostic and Freemasonic training with Sufi rituals as a kind of a key means for ideological manipulation of the Mideast, because again, it's all about control, and you control by manipulating people. You do that in the United States, and they do it worldwide. Again, Tavistock Institute out of Sussex, London, is one of the key institutions. I wrote a book about this. But so by the 19th century, the German intelligence services also began this systematic penetration of several secret societies in Shiite areas. One of the key Ayatollahs in contact with Germans was a guy by the name of Ayatollah Naguib, who came from the area where modern Iraq is today, basically the same region where Ayatollah Khomeini lived in exile. So one of the more fascinating features of this great game intelligence war between the British, the French, the Russians, and the Germans in the 19th century is the fact that German intelligence services worked with the grandfather of Khomeini's Iran. And among the key names are Mirza Mohammed Sadegh Tabatabai, the grandfather of this other guy by the name of Sadegh Tabatabai, the contact man between West German Foreign Minister Hans-Dietrich Genscher and Khomeini, and also Syed Fazal Hashani, the father of Ayatollah Hashani, Khomeini's mentor and the founder of the Iranian branch of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is, again, another Nazi organization which ran Egypt at the end of the 20th century. So make no mistake about it, Daniel, behind the Islamic fundamentalism, which Khomeini has led to victory over the Shah, lies no morally unblemished religious fervor, but as the Shah charged in the weeks prior to his departure from Iran, the forces of the British monarchy and the British secret intelligence services. The goal of the final phase of the City of London's Operation Pahlavi, which is Shah's name, was and is the destruction of the European monetary system. The primary motivation on the part of the British was to unleash chaos and confusion in Iran and the Persian Gulf, generally in order to disrupt the partnership that had begun to emerge since 1975 among France and West Germany, the socialist countries, and the leading nations of the Islamic world, including the Arabs, Iran, Pakistan, and Turkey. So again, if you kind of look at it from that perspective, you suddenly realize that what they tell you about Iran fundamentalists, you know, the students, the 1978 revolution, you know, the hostage takeover, et cetera, et cetera, all this kind of stuff, if you put it in perspective and you understand as part of the global geopolitical strategic movements, suddenly, you know, the figure of Ayatollah Khomeini, Shah of Iran, Zbigniew Brzezinski, Henry Kissinger, and all these other characters come into play because, again, on the American side, you had Cyrus Vance, you had Zbigniew Brzezinski, all of these kinds of people, Henry Kissinger, they formed a part of this operation. Because, again, to summarize, the real rulers of Iran are the British aristocratic controllers of the Muslim Brotherhood, men such as Lord Caradon, Sir John Bagot Glubb, Sir Albert Beely, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, created by Cecil Rhodes and the Round Table, along with the Middle East and Islamic Department of Oxford and Cambridge Universities. And then on the American side, you add to that Henry Kissinger, Cyrus Vance, Zbigniew Brzezinski. It is that oligarchical faction that created and now deployed the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. And that is the secret behind the Ayatollah Khomeini.
I am skipping. We got about 2 minutes to the break. I'm skipping way ahead in the timeline. We just saw recently, you mentioned Britain, a British tanker supposedly got off course and went into Iranian water. Supposedly the tanker, the guards that normally would be there had stand down or were removed, and Iran took over this British tanker. Now, Britain wants a conglomerate of forces in Europe to enforce this right of way, I guess, or whatever. It's very confusing here. Is this just another ploy for British control to come into Iran? Explain that a little bit.
2 points. I know we only have about a minute left. What you're seeing is, again, the deliberate engineering of the crisis in Iran. You know, we can talk about the November 4th, 1979 seizure of the 60 American hostages at the U.S. Embassy. or today's crisis in a larger sense, the entire history of the Anglo-American operations in the area can only be understood in the context of the battle being waged at the highest levels of world finance and geopolitics. And point number two, again, you need, you meaning the controllers, they need a global war. They don't need some local little piddly war between Syria and the terrorists. They need a global thermonuclear war because you have $4 quadrillion global debt. The only way you can write that off is wars, because wars write off debts and responsibilities. So you're seeing how much they want that war, and they're going to go out of their way to make sure they get it. You know, luckily and thankfully, Trump and Putin and some other leaders have shown remarkable restraint, and cooler heads have prevailed thus far. It doesn't mean that they will in the future, because again, if that, you know, because if, again, if you look at the area, the Jews on the one side, you have the Arabs and oil on the other. I mean, you can't think of, you know, or God has a very perverse sense of humor, or you can't think of a better, you know, a better situation for a global conflict. So yes, what we're seeing right now in Iran, in the Persian Gulf, in the Straits of Hormuz is part of this equation. But again, global situation, as far as the global players and geopolitics, maybe we can talk about it in the second half.
We got about a minute before the break. You summed that up pretty quick. We do have about exactly a minute left. How concerned should we be about, it's almost like, is this all a ploy to get rid of the arms agreement with Iran, and America then is going to make a unilateral agreement?
Well, I have a different question. Why would the United States and Great Britain, not only now, but even back then, consciously set into motion what could become an uncontrollable crisis leading to world economic breakdown and World War III? Well, again, I mentioned briefly the European monetary system. The Anglo-American factions of London and New York, they're fully committed to destruction of again, this European monetary system. The EMS was assembled back in 78 by the continental European powers, especially France and was Germany, and it was meant to become a replacement system which would have pushed aside the bankrupt International Monetary Fund, part of the liberal banking financier order. So such a fundamental transformation in the world financial balance would shift the post-World War II center from London and New York to Paris and Bonn, and that's something that the Anglo-American establishment would not allow under any conditions.
There's the music. Wow. We're getting a master level education here in history and geopolitics. Fantastic. Daniel Esselin. English.danielesselin.com is the website. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Power Hour at powerhour.com.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Oxygen. It's nature's oldest therapy and plays an essential role in destroying viruses, bacteria, mold, yeast, and fungus, and keeping the human body healthy and strong. Now, you can give your body and your immune system a mega boost of disease-fighting oxygen with all-natural Oxy-C. With so many people now leading a sedentary indoor lifestyle, most are in a chronic state of oxygen deprivation, which sets up a perfect environment for disease, general fatigue, and a host of other symptoms. Oxy-C is yours in simple, convenient capsules. Nothing to mix, nothing to hassle with. Take it with juice or water anytime. Feel a cold or flu approaching? Have no energy or spark anymore? Try all-natural Oxy-C and prepare to be amazed. Oxy-C is only available from New Earth Health Solutions at Rents.com. Look for the New Earth banner at Rents.com.
With dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Humana Food Storage is nutritious, is GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemicals, preservatives, or soy. And Humana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. Call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com.
America made just for you. Food storage I love to eat. Yum!
If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know that Fukushima, the greatest calamity in history, has now, as I've been warning since 3/11, killed off virtually the whole North Pacific Ocean and especially up and down the entire West Coast. The radiation is migrating inland and is moving across the entire country. There's only one proven defender to radiation exposure, the brilliant Chernobyl-proven discovery of Dr. Michael Kiriak, which combines the four most potent and powerful algaes on the planet, imported to the U.S. and known as Bio's Superfood. I've taken Bio's Superfood every day for several years now and want you to do the same for your sake and the health and safety of your family and loved ones. Take the banner at the top of Rents.com and prepare to learn how to save your life.
Hi, it's Catherine from the Power Hour. If you are one of the many millions of people who have difficulty falling asleep, staying asleep, or having unrestful sleep throughout the night, REM sleep could be the solution you've been searching for. If you are like me and are afraid of the dangerous side effects from prescription sleep aids, REM sleep is an all-natural alternative that contains ingredients research has shown to help improve and enhance better sleep. REM Sleep will get you the deep sleep you need to feel your best and will ensure you wake up feeling energized. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today.
Does Big Pharma have a hold of you? Thepowermall.com believes everything the body needs is provided by nature, unlike prescription drugs that aren't meant to cure but cover up your symptoms and contain addicting chemicals. Strauss Heart Drops are 100% all natural. Get the original. Get Strauss Heart Drops by calling Jay at 1-877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Or order online at thepowermall.com today.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, over the Power Mall, the specials that we have this week, Grown by Nature, 10% off all the products, the magnesium, the potassium, the selenium. Look, it's been proven. This went to court. Because Big Pharma didn't want any of this information getting out. It went to court. This type of selenium, it lowers your risk of cancer death by almost 50%. And that the court finally decided that they could, we could keep claiming that. That's how powerful this is. You know darn well if we overcame, the FDA and all these other organizations to be able to claim that. Studies show this type of selenium, not just any selenium that you get at, you know, some big box store or whatever. It has to be a certain, not a chemical synthetic form, a real form. And we have it, Grown by Nature, the multivitamin. If you don't get your vitamins from these type of sources, your nutrition from here, where are you going to get it? Because the soil's depleted. You know this. Our American, especially in America, other parts of the world, it's actually a little better. In America, it's a little worse than parts of Europe. Where are you going to get the nutrition? Do you think that, you know, those NPK fertilizer that they throw, do you think that's going to give it to you that they throw on the ground? I don't think so. Vitamin E, real full spectrum vitamin E, super silver, one of those things you just have to have, have to be prepared. Anything is possible. Anything is on the table, ladies and gentlemen, with the environment we're in. There are so many little conflicts going on and big wars and overarching agendas all competing at the same time. You need to be prepared. You need to focus on you. That's your power. That's your strength. The Power Hour. That's what this show's all about, empowering you and helping you to be your best and you to be able to overcome and to your conviction to win out here. So health is a big part of it. Global Healing, OxyPowder, Detoxidine, the B12. If you know somebody that takes B12 shots, try the Undertongue B12. Just try it. I'm telling you, it's a much higher quality source, too, I believe, than most of the shots. The Detox Foot Pad and the Iron Earth, if you grow anything, the results have been fantastic. Check that out at thepowermall.com, thepowermall.com, 877-817-9829, 877-981. 877-817-9829. Easy for me to say, right? Also, if you haven't ordered in a while, We have a coupon code for you. First 10, first 10. Put that in the checkout or let Jay know when you call. And also free shipping on Strauss Hard Chops, free shipping on REM Sleep, and auto ship. You lock in your low price and you're going to get the products at that low price locked in, shipped to you every month or every 2 months. You decide. You can cancel at any time. Thank you so much for your support and for your purchases. God bless you. Getting back to Dan, we're talking to Daniel Estulin. Iran has been a big topic in the world. It has been, it's perplexed me a little bit. You know, what exactly is going on? We're seeing some, I mean, this is master level education and history that Daniel has given us. I'm going to have to go back and listen to some of it. I understood generally some of these things, but the specifics are very important. Now here, modern day, there are multi-level, multifaceted, camps that are waging war and competing for our interest and the future of planet Earth. So, Dana, why don't you take a little time? I know you've talked about this again, but every time you come on, we need to go over this so people get this. This is why we do things a little different at the Power Hour. Explain the multi-level, faceted organizations or whatever side you paint the picture of what exactly geopolitically is going on.
Okay, so we've looked at Iran's from a vantage point of what happened in the past. Shah, the Nazis, the machinations, post-World War II, the British intelligence, et cetera, and the reason, some of the reasons why this whole thing was put together. But if you kind of look at it today, on a multi-level, nation level, again, you're looking at systemic crisis, global economic systemic crisis, end of Bretton Woods, end of the economic model, et cetera. So, destruction of these different movements which have been around for a long time and belong to the liberal banking financier elite. So what you're seeing right now is reorganization and rearranging of deck chairs in the Middle East. So let's look at some of the alliances. For example, China and Saudi Arabia deal. One of the things that they're looking at is this thing called Vision 2030, diversifying away from oil exporting dependency into the real sector economy. Now, what do they need? Social, cultural reforms. And that's why you're seeing in Saudi Arabia, you know, the Mohammed bin Salman, you know, the one who cut up or whose orders, Khashoggi was cut up into little pieces, bite-sized pieces. Women's, you know, driving, you know, the new role models, female role models we're seeing more and more of in Saudi Arabia. The Saudi Arabian monarchy versus, you know, the clergy. This is the dual relationship, you know, the perception of changes as a very dangerous element of this geopolitical game. So on the one hand, you have the soft coup of the monarchy against the clerics, because again, you have the extreme clerics could become a major pressing issue in Saudi Arabia. And they've been trying their hardest to pull off a coup against Mohammed bin Salman, and they're the ones, needless to say, who along with Turkey are promoting the idea, which of course happened, you know, that Mohammed bin Salman killed Khashoggi in the embassy in Turkey. Now, what else are we seeing? Russia and Saudi Arabia, Iran and China. United States is very concerned about this relationship. Mohammed bin Salman, strength-controlled youth who will support him, is a key element of Saudi Arabia's survival. But what you're seeing is, in Saudi Arabia, you have the Saudi army, armed forces, they're embroiled in war in Yemen, a war they're losing. Okay, Mohammed bin Salman, to engage the army, he needs to actually win this war and somehow engage in the Syria peace plan, which he's not doing because the war faction in Washington, these are the people, the Boltons and Pompeys, they're anti-Donald Trump. I know they're part of the government, but they're not working on the same team with Donald Trump. These are some of the things. Another element, Iran-Saudi Arabia. Iran is not happy with Saudi Arabia entering the multipolar world because Iran wants the multipolar world for themselves with Russia and China. So how do you play out this game if you are Russia? because, again, Russia is Iran's friend, but Russia also wants to have a very stable relationship with Saudi Arabia, who is America's best friend in the region. Russia has a policy. They call it zero sum. What does it mean? Well, on the one hand, you have Iran and Russia, and on the other hand, you have Russia and Saudi Arabia. Okay? Not a detriment to a third country party, but apolitical. In other words, Russia wants to make sure that Iran understands that Russia's relationship with Saudi Arabia is not at Iran's detriment, and that's called zero sum. The United States is concerned with Russia-Saudi Arabia relationship, just as Iran is concerned with Russia-Saudi Arabia relationship. And then at the same time, you have Iran and the United States going at it with London behind. So Iran is not happy because Russia is promising to sell S-400 anti-air missiles to Saudi Arabia, build a Kalashnikov factory in Saudi Arabia, bidding to produce Saudi Arabia's first ever nuclear power plant. Americans are not happy either. Then you have Russia and Israel in Syria. Okay, Saudi Arabia is reason number one why Iran hasn't been invited to join the BRICS. That's Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa as an alternative bloc to the United States. So what are the options for Iran? You can side with Syria in all of these international talks against Russia, Turkey, and rebut their efforts to get Syrian government to enter into a political administrative concessions phase, leading to a transitional leadership and federalization of Syria. Why is that? Well, because Iran doesn't want that conflict to end. It wants Russia to stay in the Middle East. Now, what's the next phase? Phase two. Iran could work with India to redirect, and this is very important, north-south transport corridor from Azerbaijan to Russia, instead going Armenia and Georgia, thus pioneering a new trade route to Europe. And that's big trouble for Russia. Armenia has been an obstacle and an obstructionist actor in the Moscow-led Eurasian integration. And has been working diligently with American diaspora lobby. So if Iran takes the step to resort to this north-south transit corridor to Armenia and Georgia and then to the to Europe, which is what Europeans want as well, it would probably mean it also seriously considering expanding its asymmetrical response, because, again, Iran knows very well, because they're very good at diplomacy, they've been around for a very long time, exactly what needs to be done. And this comment, Trump's comment that Iran has never won a war, Trump is not very strong in history, obviously. Okay, maybe he knows American history, although I'm not sure about that either, but he certainly doesn't know anything about Iran. Okay, now if you look at the third phase, the Balkans, if Russia and Saudi Arabia, if they reach the rapprochements, and they very possibly might, because Mohammed bin Salman and Putin, they have a very good personal relationship. So Iran broadens asymmetrical measures to include energy and geopolitical dimensions in the Balkans. What does it mean? It means that Iran returns to post-Yugoslav role in breaking up Bosnia and using Serbs as a stand-in for the Russians in a new proxy war in the Balkans. Conclusion. Mohammed bin Salman is not out of the woods yet. He is still in danger of elimination. Saudi Arabia's turn to multipolar world won't turn Middle East into regional stability, as Iran will work to stifle Saudi Arabia-Russia-China partnership. Now, Moscow's outreach to Saudi Arabia has direct consequences also for Syria related to counterbalancing or even rolling back Iran's intended post-Daesh influence in Arab Republic, which is, again, one of the reasons why Iran wants Russia to stay in the Middle East. Putin has been trying to extricate himself time and again, and there's always something going on, whether it's a tourist liner being shot out of the sky, you know, from the Sinai Peninsula, or the Turks shooting out of the sky one of Russia's Sukhois over their territory that strayed literally for 20 seconds or 23 seconds of the territory. Something is always happening to keep Russia in the Middle East, and Putin has been trying to get the hell out of this for a very long time. Remember, they got in 2015. So Russia isn't doing doing it against Iran, what you're seeing in the Middle East, what I just explained, but trying to become a supreme balancing force in Eurasian supercontinent. And Iran begins actively competing with Russia for European markets, because again, this is one of the things we're seeing right now. The fact is that you're seeing the end of global economic model Bretton Woods. Collapse is imminent. So everybody's jostling for position. What does Russia, what do they have to do? Russia must convince Iran that Saudi Arabia-Russia partnership is also a win-win for Iran. Saudi Arabia, reversal from unipolar camp to the multipolar camp would leave the United States without a source of jihadi terrorist recruits needed for raising havoc in the Middle East and beyond. And of course, again, the key point in this entire equation is Syria. So this is one part of the breakdown.
Let me interject. Question: Putin and Trump. You say if Putin is successful to getting Iran to basically buy into these relationships, Russia will have is a stabilizing effect in the area. Has Trump and Putin talked over this? Are they strategizing this?
Talked about many different issues. The thing is that you're seeing how hard the deep state is working to keep them two apart. Okay. Again, we talked about this a lot, you and I. Putin and Trump are, the best of buddies. They're both alpha males. They can get along splendidly. They do every time they see each other. You see the dynamics between these two leaders. They get along, very well. They understand each other well. They're very pragmatic. But the problem that both of them have, although Putin has been there since the year 2000 and Trump has been there for almost 3 years, you see how hard it is for Donald Trump to get anything done because he's surrounded by traitors. Traitors within and traitors without. Not only in the Democratic Party, but also Republican, because again, most of the Republican Party, okay, they are part of the liberal banking financier order. So when people, break the United States political spectrum into, Democrats and Republicans, they don't understand that the economic model that's covering both of these parties is the same. That's one of the reasons why the Bushes voted for Hillary Clinton. They're not enemies. None of their best buddies, and they go for dinners together, although they do. The point is that they both are part of the liberal banking financier Bretton Woods Wall Street centered operation based on infinite growth on a finite planet, something you simply cannot have. And we're seeing the consequences of limits to growth. So the West expanded at Russia's expense when the Soviet bloc collapsed back in 1991, and that gave them a new lease on life for another 25 years. That lease on life has now has expired. And they have nowhere to grow because the planet Earth is a finite space. So they need to come up with a new model. And they can't come up with a new model because there's no new model anywhere in the West, because the entire language, and I don't mean English or French or Spanish, I mean language, economic language, is based on the model that is now on its deathbed. And the only country in the world that actually has its own language and its own model that was very, very successful, including in 1991, Russia's economy grew 10%, although they'll never tell you about it. The point is that the country collapsed for many different other reasons, which is just beyond the scope of this interview. But the point is, what you're seeing right now globally is the fact that although Putin and Trump can get along beautifully and sit down, and if they were allowed to actually do it, they could reach agreements and get things done and implemented, within 6 months. The point is, and Putin proposed that to Donald Trump back in Helsinki, every time they get together, for the two countries to create a think tank in Russia to write a new economic model, because we have our own economic theory which worked very well because it was based on the ideas of Karl Marx and Adam Smith. So our model has always worked, and because the Soviet Union has always been excluded from Western and American markets, we've retained our language that could explain a new economic model. And that's what's going to happen, because Trump is going to win the elections 100%. Okay, so if somebody's going to have to bet somewhere, bet on Donald Trump. Okay, he's going to win. It's guaranteed. Okay?
Let me stop right there. Stop right there. That's big news. He's going to win because the people behind him want him to win.
Again, this is not a conspiracy theory. The thing is that the liberal banking financier org, they were all in on the Mueller thing. And they lost big time. We saw what happened. We need to go over it. Okay? So they have no way to get rid of Donald Trump. There's nothing they can do. They have no ideas that could save the United States from destruction. And not only the United States, the entire global financial order. Okay? And so Trump became president in the first place because his point was to dismantle the petrodollar model, which is the model of his enemies. Okay, not the dollar, but petrodollar, and also the Bretton Woods, which is part of the liberal banking financier order. And so what's going to happen probably at the end of the first year of Trump's second term is the great powers, because, again, Bretton Woods was a system put together by the winners of World War II. And what you're going to have is at the end of the first year of Trump's second term, the great powers, and by that I mean the United States, China, Russia, India, and we don't know if someone else, England or London at this point is out of the game, and Germany has always been a second-tier power. They're going to have to sit down, and they're going to have to come up with a new model. Call it Bretton Woods 2 or call it whatever you want to call it. But the point is they're going to have to sit down and iron out a new model with a new language that will help the world redirect its efforts to a new world. Because the world we're living in right now is dead. It's on its deathbed. And you cannot save it. There's nothing you can do because you can't print your way out of this. If you look at the numbers, Trump is trumping the great economic miracle of the United States. Let's be honest, okay? Those who understand economy will understand what I mean. If you take out of the equation all the money which was printed, okay, in the United States since Reaganomics back in 1981, over the last 40 years, that's two generations, the real growth in the United States is 0%. And globally, it's the same thing. I don't want to go into the financial numbers again, because if people are interested, they can read it in my book, the In the Shadows of the Presidency, or just see it online. Okay, all the stuff that's coming out. Okay, you have quadrillions of dollars of debt. I'm not even going to talk about the fact that they simply eliminated the ceiling in the United States, and now 22 trillion or 23 trillion. It doesn't matter what it is. Okay, you can never pay any of that back, which is why you need a Middle Eastern war. And they've been going at it for a long time.
All right, let me stop you right there. You've mentioned that this is about the fourth time you've really mentioned this global war, nuclear war. Is this on the table? Is this in the plans?
It's on the table. Of course it's on the table, because the only way you can, again, if Clinton become president, all of us probably would have been turning to ash by now. Because the liberals only have one way out of this, global thermonuclear war. Because, again, wars write off debts and responsibilities. Because if not, explain to me how you're going to write off $2, $3, or $4 quadrillion dollar debt.
It's a joke.
How are you going to do this?
We're not.
So basically, again, I know we're running out of time, so I want to talk about, again, multipolar world. So what you see right now, and this is very important, U.S.-led unipolar world is unilateral initiatives, one. Two, lead from behind through regional and institutional partners, which is what America is doing right now. Multipolar world, reform / dismantling of International Monetary Fund, World Bank, Bretton Woods institutions, BRICS, plus each member encouraging multilateral cooperation between each other's respective regional integration organizations. Example, you have Mercosur, you have European Union, you have the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement, etc., ASEAN Cooperation, all these nations cooperating with one another for this multilateral global cooperation. So multipolar world security? How do you provide security to a multipolar world, in a world where the United States is trying to dismantle multipolar and keep their unipolar world intact? How do you do that? Via strengthening their individual and collective security. That's why the Russians and the Chinese are working together, you know, security cooperation, militarily, demographically, economically, you know, on the level of information, ideologically, etc. International cooperation through multipolar institutions, be it BRICS, be it G20, be it, you know, Shanghai Cooperation Agreement. Now, the Americans and their unipolar counterweight. So, for example, the Americans are grooming India, groomed to be unipolar world's counterweight to China. They can't do it physically because China is too big and too strong, but they're capable of being, you know, point of spear against China's One Belt, One Road initiative. That's on the one hand. Also, if you look at, you know, tripartite, you know, great powers, Russia, Iran, Turkey, but there's danger that the American-backed Kurdistan and also dismantling of Iraq and reversal of Sykes-Picot order in the Middle East. So all of these elements are key elements in this equation. Another element is Latin America. We're seeing it right now in Venezuela. Call it Operation Condor 2.0, fortifying the landmass under its control. And Americans control all of the Latin America except Venezuela, Bolivia, and, you know, a little bit of some of the other nations. But most of it is under the control of the American unipolar world. So, conclusions. Multipolar states, they rely on BRICS and G20 to drive economic and financial institutional reform. Use the Shanghai Cooperation Agreement as central platform for integrating hard, soft, and also democratic security measures. Build Silk Road as a way to retool global trade routes. Now, what do you have as far as the unipolar states? Promote clash of civilizations, which is what you're seeing right now, to divide Eastern Hemisphere, which is what you're seeing right now. Hybrid war against key states, which is what you're seeing right now, globally, be it in Venezuela, be it in Africa, be it in some of the countries in the Middle East, and also have the United States retain forward operating bases, Afro-Eurasia, for its resources and also for its connectivity corridors of hybrid warfare.
There's the music. You mentioned, you know, it's been a while now, but you mentioned the possibility on the table, civil war in America. Is it still there?
It's very much there. I mean, look what they're talking about. Baltimore, California trying to secede. Texas, just, you know, pick a place, pick a state. It's on the table.
Wow. Fantastic interview. I'm going to go have to listen to it again. Fantastic information. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what really goes on when people talk about in those dark rooms. This is the type of discussions that they have, and we're bringing it to you here at the Power Hour. Daniel, it's an absolute pleasure. God bless you. God keep you. And until next time, my friend.
Thank you. Take care.
Everybody, take care. Scott Bennett is going to fill in, and we're going to have a replay. I think Joyce tomorrow in honor of her birthday, so you get to hear that. I'll be back the beginning of next week. Have a fantastic weekend. God bless you.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like Strauss Heart Drops, North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Foods Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Dr. Joe Schneller.
The efficacy that we're looking for, that we're going to prove, is that Carnivora wakes up this immune system and makes it dominate.
I highly recommend that you get started right away using Carnivora because it really will help you. Just follow the directions as the company gives them to you. And I just want everybody to know that there's been no one paid to do this. I'm doing this on my own because I care about everybody and want to see healthy people.
My husband has recovered tremendously after the physician suggested that he start taking Carnivora. When he was doing so well, I decided to start taking it as well, and we're both so pleased to be able to feel healthy again.
Hello, folks. Richard Ostro of Carnivora Research International here. Visit carnivora.com or call 1-866-VENUS-FLY. That's carnivora.com or 1-866-VENUS-FLY.